Melanie Jasper says that her son, Cooper, was born with a smile on his face. The dimple never left his cheek. He won the hearts of every person he knew, his three older sisters and parents and grandparents and teachers and friends. He loved to laugh and love. His father, JJ, confessing partiality, calls him practically a perfect child. And Cooper was born to a perfect family. Farm dwelling, fun-loving, God-seeking, Christ-hungry. JJ and Melanie poured their hearts into the lives of their four children. And JJ cherished every minute he had with his only son. And that's why they were in the dune buggy on that summer day. They intended to cut the grass together, but the lawnmower needed a spark plug, and Melanie had run the errand to go and secure one. JJ and 5-year-old Cooper seized the opportunity for a quick ride. They had done this 1,000 times, zipping along the dirt road in a roll cage cart. The ride was nothing new, but the flip was. On a completely level road with Cooper safely buckled in, JJ made a circle and the buggy rolled over. Cooper was unresponsive. JJ called 911 and then Melanie. There's been an accident, he told her. I don't think Cooper is going to make it. The next hours were every parent's nightmare. Ambulance, ER, sobs, the shock, and finally the news that Cooper had passed from this life into heaven. JJ and Melanie found themselves doing the unthinkable, selecting a casket, planning a funeral, envisioning life without their only son. In the coming days, they fell into a mind-numbing rhythm. Each morning upon awaking, they held each other and sobbed uncontrollably. And after gathering enough courage to climb out of bed, they'd go downstairs to their family and friends who awaited them. They would soldier through the day until bedtime. And then they'd go to bed, hold each other, and cry themselves to sleep. JJ told Max Lucado, there is no class or book on this planet that can prepare you to have your 5-year-old son die in your arms. We know what the bottom looks like. The bottom. We pass much of life, if not most of life, at mid-altitude. Occasionally we summit a peak, our wedding, a promotion, a graduation, the birth of a child. But most of life is lived at mid-level. Monday-ish obligations of carpools and expense reports and recipes, but on occasion the world bottoms out. The dune buggy flips. The housing market crashes. The test results come back positive. And before we know it, we discover what the bottom looks like. In Joseph's case, he discovered the auction block of Egypt. The bidding began, and for the second time in his young life, he was on the market. The favored son of Jacob found himself prodded and pricked, examined for fleas, and pushed about like a donkey. Potiphar, an Egyptian official, bought him, and Joseph didn't speak the language or know the culture. The food was strange, and the work was grueling, and the odds were against him. And so we turn the page, and we brace for the worst. You know, the next chapter in the story will describe Joshua's consequent plunge into addiction and anger or despair, right? Wrong. Genesis 39, verse 2, the Lord was with Joshua, was with Joseph as well. He was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Joseph had arrived in Egypt with nothing but the clothes on his back and the call of God on his heart. Yet by the end of four verses, he was running the house of a man who ran security for Pharaoh. How do we explain the turnaround? Very simple. God was with him. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. Verse 3, his master saw that the Lord was with him. Verse 5, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had. Joseph's story just parted company with the volumes of self-help books and all of the secret to success formulas that direct a struggler to an inner power to dig deeper. Joseph's story points elsewhere. It tells us to look higher. He succeeded because God was present. God was with Joseph, like a blanket is to a baby. It was all over him. David asked, "Where can I go to get away from your spirit? Where can I run from you?" He then listed the various places he found God in: the heavens, the grave. If I rise with the sun in the east and settle in the west, beyond the sea, even there you would guide me. God, everywhere. Joseph's account of these verses would have read, "Where can I get away to get away from your spirit? If I go to the bottom of a dry pit, to the top of the slave block, to the home of a foreigner, even there you would guide me." Your adaptation of the verse might read, "Where can I go to get away from your spirit? If I go to the ER or the rehab clinic or ICU, the shelter for battered women, the county jail, even there, you would guide me." You will never go where God is not. Make God's presence your passion. How? Be more sponge, less rock. Place a rock in the ocean, and what happens? Its surface gets wet. And the exterior may change color, but the interior remains untouched. You place a sponge in the ocean and notice the change. It absorbs the water. The ocean penetrates every pore and alters the essence of the sponge. God surrounds us in the same way that the Pacific Ocean surrounds an ocean floor pebble. He is everywhere, above, below. We choose our response. Rock or sponge? Resist or receive? Everything within you may say, harden the heart, run from God, resist God, blame God. But be careful. Hard hearts never heal. Spongy ones do. And here's how to open every pore of your soul to God's presence. Lay claim to the nearness of God. Hebrews 13:5, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. In the Greek, this passage has five negatives. It could be translated, I will not leave thee. Neither will I not forsake thee. Just grip this promise like you would the parachute that it is. Repeat it to yourself over and over until it trumps the voices of fear or angst. Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you, the mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. You may lose the sense of God's presence. Job did. But if I go to the east, he's not there. If I go to the west, I do not find him. When he is at work in the north, I do not see him. When he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. Job felt as if he was far from God. Yet in spite of his inability to feel God, Job resolved, but he knows the way I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. What gritty determination. Yes, this is a test. Difficult days demand decisions of faith. The psalmist declared, when I am afraid, I put my trust in you. Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why are you so disturbed within me? Put your hope in God, for I will yet praise him. Don't equate the presence of God with a good mood or a pleasant temperament. God is near, whether you're happy or not. And sometimes you have to sort of take your feelings outside and give them a good talking to. Cling to his character. Quarry from the Bible a list of the deep qualities of God and praise him. Press them into your heart. Max's list reads as follows. He is still sovereign. He still knows my name. Angels still respond to his call. The hearts of rulers still yield to his bidding. The death of Jesus still saves souls. The Spirit of God still indwells saints. Heaven is still only heartbeats away. The grave is still temporary housing. God is still faithful. He's not caught off guard. He uses everything for his glory and my ultimate good. He uses tragedy to accomplish his will, and his will is right. It's holy and perfect. Sorrow may come with the night, but joy comes with the morning. God bears fruit in the midst of affliction. In the household of Potiphar, Joseph moved up the career ladder, kind of like a fireman after a cat. He earned promotions. He earned clout. He earned attention. Too much attention, in fact. And it didn't take long for Mrs. Potiphar to notice this handsome young Hebrew and to make her intentions crystal clear. Genesis 39:7. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me. Verse 10 says she courted him day by day. And Joseph had plenty of opportunities to consider the proposition and good reasons to accept it. After all, wasn't she married to his master? And wasn't he obligated to obey the wishes of the owner, even if the wish was clandestine sex? And it would be clandestine. No one would know. What happens in the bedroom stays in the bedroom, right? And didn't Joseph deserve a little pleasure after everything he had experienced? A little comfort? A little release? But no. Adultery would have only been another form of abandoning his destiny. another way of giving up. And so young Joseph held firm. Unfortunately, so did Mrs. Potiphar. If she couldn't flirt Joseph into her bed, she would force him. And she grabbed for his robe, and he let her have it. He chose his character over his coat. And when he ran, she concocted a story. And when Potiphar came home, she was ready with her lie and Joseph's coat as proof. Potiphar charged Joseph with sexual assault and locked him in the jail. And Joseph was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Not a prison in the modern sense, but a warren of underground, windowless rooms with damp floors and stale food and bitter water. Guards showed him into the dungeon, slammed the door, and Joseph leaned back against the wall and slid down to the floor. "I have done nothing here that they should put me into this dungeon." Joseph had done his best for Potiphar's house. He had made a fortune for his employer. He had kept the chores done and his room tidy, and he had adapted to the new culture. He had resisted the sexual advances. So how was he rewarded? A prison sentence with no hope of getting out. Since when does the high road lead to over the cliff? Well, it goes clear back to Genesis 3, the chapter that documents the story of evil entering into the world. Disaster came in the form of Lucifer, the fallen angel. And as long as Satan prowls around like a roaring lion, he will wreak havoc among God's people. He will lock preachers such as Paul in prison. He will exile pastors like John on a remote island. He will afflict the friends of Jesus like Lazarus with diseases. But his strategies always backfire. The imprisoned Paul wrote epistles. The banished John saw heaven. The cemetery of Lazarus became a stage on which Christ performed one of his greatest miracles. There it is again. Intended evil becomes ultimate good. Remember, God is not sometimes sovereign. He is not occasionally victorious. He doesn't occupy the throne one day and vacate it the next. Jeremiah 30:24, the Lord will not turn back until he has fulfilled and accomplished the intent of his heart and mind. The season where you might find yourself right now may puzzle you, but it doesn't bewilder God. He can and will use it for his purpose. Case in point, Joseph in prison. From an earthly viewpoint, the Egyptian jail was a tragic conclusion of Joseph's life, and Satan could chalk up a victory for the dark side. All plans to use Joseph ended with the slamming of that jail door. The devil had Joseph just where he wanted him. But so did God. Psalm 105, verse 18 and 19. They bruised Joseph's feet with fetters. They placed his neck in an iron collar. Until the time came to fulfill his dreams, the Lord tested Joseph's character. What Satan intended for evil, God used for testing. Every day, God tests us through people, through pain, through problems. Stop and consider your circumstances. Can you identify the tests of today? Pending bills, threatening weather, aching joints. If you see your troubles as nothing more than isolated hassles and hurts, you'll grow bitter, angry. Yet if you will see your troubles as tests by God, used for Him, by Him, for His glory and for your maturity, then even the smallest incidents take on significance. Each day has a pop quiz, and some seasons are final exams. They're brutal and sudden pitfalls of stress, sickness, sadness. Like Joseph, you did your best. Like Joseph, your best was rewarded with incarceration. What is the purpose of the test? Why didn't God keep Joseph out of prison? Might this be the answer? James chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. You will be perfect and complete when your endurance is fully developed, needing nothing. When J.J. Jasper told his oldest daughter about Cooper's death, he prepared her by saying, "I need you to hold on to everything you know of who God is, because I've got some really rough news to tell you." What valuable counsel. In changing times, lay hold of the unchanging God. When all around my soul gives way, He then is all my hope, my stay. J.J. Jasper found God's presence amid God's people. His hurts are still deep, but his faith is deeper still. And whenever he tells the story of losing Cooper, he says, quote, "We know what the bottom looks like, but we know who is waiting there, Jesus Christ." He's waiting on you, my friend. If Joseph's story is any precedent, God can use Egypt to teach you, to teach me, that He is with us. Your family may be gone and your supporters may have left and your friends may be silent, but God has not budged. His promise still stands. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. Selah.